Campus Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today, the stories that I have for you are all about various security news updates and how those relate to things that you should be aware of as they directly impact you. So let's get started on that. The first one has to do with deep packet inspection. This is quite the tough nut to crack. And deep packet inspection, otherwise known as DPI, is something that's really quite a problem right now. And I do mean a ginormous problem. And this all started back in roughly in January. There were a bunch of websites, very popular websites, that changed to HTTPS only. So if you attempted to access their sites or their resources in general over HTTP, you would automatically be redirected to HTTPS. By and large, I support this, and I think this is a really big improvement. Now, the problem that it then faces everybody who has to deal with this is from a security perspective and from a content filtering perspective, this really becomes a ginormous problem. So let's talk this through, and I'll try and make this make sense to you. So back in January, you had Google and Facebook and LinkedIn and Yahoo and some other places who said, you know what, we're just going to do HTTPS everywhere. And as I said, this is a really good idea. But if you happen to be someplace where you want to do or you have to do content filtering for purposes of compliance, you've really got a hard issue on your hands here, especially with regards to Google Mail. So if your organization had made what I would characterize as an ill-advised decision to go with Google Mail and Google Apps and Google Drive and Google this and that, then you're pretty well stuck to the point where you can't packet inspect those things, at least not at the perimeter level. You can't proxy those things. The best you can do is hope to do some level of content filtering at the host base level, and I can tell you that really it doesn't work. And the reason I say it really doesn't work is, let's say, for example, your host-based security product has a content filter on it, and maybe it's blocking porn. And yet, somebody decides they're going to utilize the computer to go to images.google.com and search for porn. Well, of course, what do you think they're going to see? Sure enough, they're going to get exactly what they are looking for. So, your host-based security product is not a man-in-the-middle proxy that does DPI. It just doesn't. What the perimeter is for in anything that's in front of your computer is supposed to be, at least from a security perspective, is supposed to be inspecting those packets for viruses, for advanced persistent threats, for bad content, or disallowed content. And in many cases, you need to be antivirus scanning these things. Let's take, for example, you went to an HTTPS website and it had some embedded video in it, and that video happened to have malicious JavaScript in it. Well, unless you're doing deep packet inspection on the content from that site, then that JavaScript is going to get through to the endpoint. So this is a really, really enormous problem because in order to do DPI, you have to break apart those packets that are coming in that are, of course, associated with a digital certificate, so therefore they're signed as being associated with a particular chain of trust or a trusted source that has a chain of trust behind it. So there's this whole authentication validation component that's occurring that says, oh, you went to cbsnews.com. Well, cbsnews.com happens to have a certificate. And it's when this is getting delivered to you, it's verifying that, yes, indeed, That content came from CBSNews.com. If you're doing DPI, though, which it's really significantly necessary to do DPI, then those packets have to get broken apart, and they have to get re-encrypted or re-encapsulated to get delivered to the endpoint. And in that circumstance, the perimeter device has to re-encrypt those packets with something. But what can they re-encrypt it with? The only thing that they can re-encrypt it with is a device certificate. Now, there's no externally verifiable root chain of trust certificate authority that is going to give somebody a third-party verifiable signed certificate for the purposes of DPI. So that's one problem. So whatever the certificate is, it's going to be a self-signed device certificate. So it's not going to have, it's not going to be associated with a chain of trust, not by default. And then let's just presume that you decide, oh, I can fix that problem. I'll just take that certificate and I'll put it in the root certificate authority chain of trust, and I'll basically bypass those security provisions and make this particular device certificate something that is actually trusted by the endpoints. Well, sure, go ahead and do that, but that still isn't going to solve your problem. That'll just muddy the waters as far as I'm concerned. And I've tested the heck out of this. Well, what it does is it makes your browser come back up with a different certificate. So let's just imagine you're going to google.com. And you all know it's on HTTPS at this point. So you go there, and you've got DPI turned on. So DPI works. It breaks apart those packets. It inspects them. It does the content filtering, and it does so successfully. It blocks the porn. It also allows for the scanning for APT and viruses and malicious code, IPS, the whole nine yards. It then re-encrypts those packets using the self-signed device certificate. Now, that device certificate, let's just for sake of example here in this discussion, say that its name is Firewall 1. So this certificate comes to your browser, whether it's Chrome or Firefox or Internet Explorer, I don't care. They all pretty much behave the same way. It comes to your browser and it says, oh, I'm a certificate for Firewall 1. Except your browser is not stupid. It says, wait a second here. You were trying to go to google.com. That doesn't match. And it's still going to show you a message that is alerting you as the end user of that browser that something is hinky. So the bottom line here is that there is no good answer for this at this point in time. DPI is increasingly on a daily basis becoming more and more necessary, but oh boy, is it one tough nut to crack. So this is certainly something that I will continue to do some work on, but it's very hard, and I think this actually puts more load on the host-based security strategy, especially meaning that you had better not be browsing the internet as an administrative account or doing any email as an administrative account. So let's actually take that right into the next topic, which was the giant phishing problems that have been exposed. And there was a Intel Security. Yeah, Intel Security put together some pretty slick phishing attempts and a little quiz, and I've got a link to this so you can actually test yourself to find out how much you fall for phishing scams. You may recall a few shows ago I talked about how Verizon's data breach report from the entire annual year of 2014 analysis said that the fishing attempts by far were, I think they were up 80%, and by far they were the most successful breach vector up to that, you know, of 2014. So they were talking how really phishing attempts are really what we need to be focusing our efforts on. And that was rather salient, considering that just earlier this week, I read where the Japanese Ministry of Defense lost over 1 million personally identifiable information records through a single successful phishing attempt breach. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. So, phishing attempts are a giant problem. Again, I'm going to post a link to Intel Security's little test here so that you can actually test yourself. And the phishing emails are all about you're either clicking on links or some sort of code is executing in this HTML-based email that you receive. And you got to realize that the vast majority of emails that you receive are HTML-based. So if there is malicious code in there, it's going to execute. And certainly one approach you could take is you could say, oh, well, forget that. I'm just going to convert all emails to text. But that's really not very business or human friendly. So I don't support that. I don't think it's a viable strategy. Whatever you're going to do from a security perspective has to also still support the needs of the business and the human beings. So that's just, I don't see that as a viable strategy. Now, this also leads into this whole phishing thing. You could say, oh, well, I'm just not going to click on links. Sure, you could say that, but now you're ignoring things like Stegosploit. So Stegosploit is probably the most fascinating thing that I've seen in a very long time. And yes, I have a link to it along with this podcast on qualityplusconsulting.com if you're interested in the article. There's a security researcher whose name is Saumil Shah, and he's from India, and he has spent the last 5 years basically perfecting Stegosploit. And his position is that if he's come up with this, other people have come up with this as well, and given the fact that they were working on it probably as a full-time job paid by hackers or, you know, organized crime in order to develop this, he figures that organized crime actually has this as an attack vector already. And so again, it's called Stegosploit, but basically what it is simply looking at a picture online can hack your computer. Stegosploit is a way to take, it's a steganography type attack that can take an image file and embed code in it. And then, for example, let's say somebody was to write you an email that was an HTML-based email and it had some JavaScript in it, and it then called to execute to display, simply display, you don't even have to click on it, simply to display this image file to you on your machine. So in that circumstance, realize that when you are viewing your emails through Outlook, then what's actually happening is those emails are opening up in Internet Explorer. I mean, your viewing pane for an HTML-based email in Outlook is really Internet Explorer. So you got to realize it's actually executing in a browser. Now, if you're getting your email through webmail of some sort through Chrome, again, it's still executing in a browser. If you're using Firefox, it's still executing in a browser. The vast majority of email applications today are going to execute emails. When I say execute, they are showing them to you as being rendered by some browser on your machine. So if you have browser vulnerabilities, or you're browsing the internet and doing emails as an admin level account, this is truly astronomically catastrophic. And you can't take the position anymore of saying that it's images. They're just images. Well, no, they're not just images. They could actually be hiding Stegosploit and similar techniques. And when the security researcher was doing some further intense analysis into this, he was suggesting that he has not tested this extensively on image sharing sites such as Imgur, or Imgur, however you want to say that, or Dropbox, and he says it might not work everywhere because the malicious file has to be uploaded without an extension in order for the browser to be tricked into executing it with the malicious JavaScript. And he says there are some sites such as Dropbox that don't allow that, and other sites like Facebook and LinkedIn, they reprocess images when they're uploaded. So if there's a website that isn't going to take the image as you upload it, instead if it's going to reprocess it, then that will take the steganography and, you know, encoded malicious code out of that image. So that's good. And pretty much the only way that I would imagine that you can actually deal with this sort of problem is to literally be using deep packet inspection with an advanced persistent threat and a full extensible threat management suite. I really think that's the only way to deal with this, and we've just previously discussed how DPI is a hard nut to crack. So I will continue to work on that. Let's move on to something that I found absolutely not shocking, but ridiculous, and that is that there's been a bit of comeuppance for the Grand Theft Auto gamers out there. And when I say comeuppance, it's like, really? If Grand Theft Auto is the thing that you spend doing your time, I guess this is what you get? I mean, some people have posted some really nasty malware in very, very, very popular mods for Grand Theft Auto, and they're basically malicious keystroke loggers, and they made temp files or temp folders, did all this keystroke logging, stole your credentials, all kinds of nasty things, hijacked your computer, and, you know, basically did bad things. And all of this had to do with, you know, Grand Theft Auto and mods through Steam. So Steam is okay, but it's like anything else. You should not be doing these games as an admin account. Unfortunately, what I've personally seen is that a lot of these games are very poorly written. And the problem with the very poorly written games is they are requiring you to run them as an administrative account. And this isn't something that you can just do some privilege escalation for. This is literally these stupid games are wanting you to log on to your PC as the administrator account and then run the game. So what do you have in terms of, you know, security protections when you're playing this game? I don't think you have them. They're kind of gone. So this is one of those elements where the only approach you can take at that point is to say, this is my gaming PC, and that's what it's going to be. I'm not going to use it to do my banking or anything serious. I'm not going to be doing my email on it. No shopping, no credit card transactions. I'm not going to store any of my personally identifiable information. No way in heck are you doing your taxes on that computer. You know, I would suggest you don't even do your homework on that computer. So now this gets to be really pricey because you've got to buy and maintain a completely separate computer just so you can play some poorly written game. And when I say poorly written, I'm talking about from a security perspective, they did not write, and I'm not picking specifically on GTA, but I've seen a lot of these games where you have to be the local admin in order to run these games. And that is just poorly written software as far as I'm concerned. Because it's not as if appropriate security models is something new. I mean, this is something that's been around for over 20 years. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about how Adobe Reader has completely changed. Everybody seems to have Adobe Reader on their computer, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I can certainly see the benefit of that, considering the fact that there's a lot of free PDF readers that are just neutered in terms of their functionality when compared to Adobe Reader. And the challenge that we face now is Adobe has gone to a product called DC. I don't even know what it means, but that's what they're calling it now. And so you have Acrobat DC, and then you have Reader DC. So they've gone to this whole DC product, and I haven't decided if I hate it or not. But what I can tell you is that if you are staying on top of security patches, you will have already deployed DC to your systems. So the challenge that you face then is, what if you had applications that integrate with Adobe Reader, such as QuickBooks? They may blow up now. And yes, I have actually seen this in the last week. I saw where certain functions inside of QuickBooks worked just fine, and I saw where other functions in QuickBooks did not work at all anymore. They were completely blown up, and it was basically completely blown up because DC was on that computer. And you can't take the approach that says, oh, well, we're not going to deploy DC. No, you have to patch Adobe Reader. You either remove Adobe Reader from your machine or you patch it, one or the other, that you don't have some option to just leave it unpatched. Because otherwise you're leaving your machines completely vulnerable to malicious code executing, doing horrible, heinous, nasty things on your systems that was completely preventable by simply installing a patch. So I think we're going to continue to see fallout associated with this Adobe Reader DC product. Oh, and I've personally experienced Adobe Acrobat DC issues as well, meaning you install the update, oh, now you've got DC, well, your licensing module has blown up, as well as other links, like whatever the settings were that you had where you could send a PDF file directly out of Acrobat to your email client. It doesn't seem to understand where your email client is anymore. So it's a whole lot of mess. Okay. Let's talk about the changes that are coming to Microsoft Patch Day. Historically, since about 2003, the patch day was the second Tuesday of every month, but at the recent Ignite conference in May, Microsoft talked about how they are completely going to be changing Patch Tuesday, and they are doing it, quote, for security's sake. And I agree with it in many levels. So what they're saying is they're going to continue to have, the business patching strategies. They're calling it Windows Update for Business, and, you know, frankly, all those, you know, business-regulated patch management strategies have all been in place since a long time. So really nothing new there. The main piece here is that they're talking about with Windows 10, although it's not clear right now whether they're going to push out updates for all systems, you know, back to like Vista and older versions of Office and such. It's not clear if they're going to maintain Patch Tuesday for those systems or if they're just going to push out updates as available. And that's the big change here, is push updates out as available, the idea being that you're not waiting roughly 30 days before the next patch is available for you to download. Therefore, then the time frame for a zero-day vulnerability to get to your computer is being reduced. But in the grand scheme of things, Microsoft has consistently demonstrated that whenever there was a very serious vulnerability, they would release what was called an out-of-cycle patch. So the whole security gap claim with Patch Tuesday being every roughly 30 days, I really never bought into that, because Microsoft was always very good about releasing patches that were very, very serious patches, releasing them out of cycle. But anyways, I think that's relevant. You need to know that that's coming. And for home users, that's probably not going to have much change, but certainly if you are managing systems, that this is, you know, something is going to change significantly that's going to affect you. So the next interesting thing that I have for you is the Moose malicious code has been running around. It is a Linux-based worm that turns routers into social network bots, which I found to be rather amusing and dangerous all at the same time. It targets cable and DSL modems, home routers, and other embedded computers that are not secure. And when I say embedded computers, I'm talking about the whole Internet of Things, Internet-connected things like your refrigerator and your Nest thermostat and lighting systems and home control systems, all of these things that, you know, your baby cameras and, you know, these sorts of things that have some sort of embedded web server in them, and they're not secure. I mean, you just know they're not secure. And so what this malware would do is it would do an attack, and it would gain control over the device. It would then utilize that control to install malicious code, which would then proxy your network for stealing credentials, stealing cookies, doing fake posts on your behalf. And it would utilize your network in order to create fake accounts that they could then do fake likes and things like that with. And then that turns into monetization through, because, you know, if you're trying to figure out how to be a criminal and to monetize criminal activity, then there's a huge amount that has to do with click fraud. Okay, click fraud. You click on advertisements. Whoever's the hoster of the advertisement is getting more click payout from the advertiser. So it's called click fraud. Anyways, this thing is in the wild, and it's pretty serious. And the other thing that I found rather amusing was that I would say standard operating procedure protections for proper perimeter devices would have completely blocked this. So it's just another fine example of insecure devices that really shouldn't be connected to the internet at all, but yet they are. And there's not a whole lot to do about it other than to try to put a bidirectional inspection perimeter device in place. So just these folks really should not be utilizing these home class little routers or these little home class, quote, and I'm going to do air quotes, firewall, because that's basically meaningless nowadays. You need to have a full extensible threat management security appliance at the perimeter, or you just toast. And it has to be programmed properly. There's articles on my website about that, so please do check that out. But that's it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed the intense security news update.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. I'm Gregory Berg, and coming up on Monday's morning show here on WGTD, a conversation with Zach